Hey, pals. Welcome to episode 17 of the JV Club. I'm going to keep this intro short and sweet because this is a long episode as it is. I definitely talked a ton with my good friend April Richardson. The time flew by and I guess I could have made edits for time, but I just didn't want to. So hopefully you guys will hang in and enjoy what I think is a pretty lively conversation. I also talk more up top. I had this movie that I, for some reason, felt strongly compelled to talk about and tell April about. And if you tuned into this episode specifically to hear April and you're not as familiar with me, I apologize. You just need to hang in there because we do get into April-related stuff. But I do talk for like a few minutes with her about this movie that was kind of in my mind. For those of you who enjoy the Jen Kirkman episode, I also want to point out that there are a lot of parallels between April and Jen, and it's kind of an interesting coincidence, or maybe it's not a coincidence, that they're both over at Chelsea Lately and both two of my favorite female writers and comedians. Obviously, Burning Love is still going strong. Thank you so much for all of the appreciation and the kind words about that. It's just been such a dream. Thanks to all the Cora fans. I hope you guys enjoyed the season finale. There will be a season two. I'm sure you already know that. And I'm super excited because David Faustino and PJ Byrne and I will be at the Comic-Con in San Diego Friday, July 13th. So hopefully we'll get a chance to meet some of you guys in person. And as usual, I encourage you to check out the Pinterest boards. Thank you, Jules, for those. And the Facebook page. Shout outs. I wanted to acknowledge Chris via Twitter. Tamara sent me a wonderful Facebook message. Michael Dye. Hannah, your email was lovely, as are all your tweets. Victor and Katie and Jennifer from Facebook. Grant, always love your emails. Ben, Chris N. sent me a wonderful email. And then I just wanted to throw out some shout outs to some iTunes reviewers. You guys have blown me away. Please do write a review if you see fit. I just read this latest round of reviews and lost my mind in a good way. Mars 4, insert clever name here, Andrew, QDFTR, Randy, Cynthia, Amanda H, Poverbau, Lore, ha, Jacqueline and Ruben, you guys, just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful feedback. So that's it. I'm not going to talk any longer because I want to get right into April's episode, and I hope you guys enjoy it. And listen, I'm crazy about each and every one of you. I hope you're having a great Thursday, unless you're listening to this on a different day of the week, in which case, insert day here.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Listen, I am here with my dear friend, April Richardson.
Hello.
She is, she's a comic. She is a writer. She writes on Chelsea Lately. I know a lot of you guys enjoy that show. She is often seen as a panelist on the show. I imagine you will be seeing her more and more doing that.
Yes.
How are you doing?
I mean, I've been better, but I'm good.
We, April came over a couple of hours ago and both of our voices are hoarse just from hanging out and talking before we
girl
even
talk.
Started the podcasting process. But now we've put a very strange professional spin on the conversation.
Yes.
We're like breaking into crisp, professional, serious JV
newscaster
Club mode.
Yeah. Voices. Yes.
Where we only talk about the most serious of issues.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking a sip of water. Oh, that was great. And I'm chewing gum. There's a lot going on right now. There's a lot of stimuli going on in and around my mouthfeeler area. Here's what I'm going to bring up first because I wanted to talk about it, and it has absolutely nothing to do with you.
Okay.
And it may go nowhere.
All right.
But here's what I wanted to say. The other day, I did that thing where you are
I was working on something that I could actually work on with my hands and watch television at the same time, because it's like a little craft.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of went down the rabbit hole of the Netflix streaming world where one thing and then it suggests five other things. And then you're like,
I know it well.
And then you watch a new thing and then that leads to another thing. So I went down that rabbit hole and like a couple of steps in, I ended up with this movie called... Shades of Fear,
which sounds terrible.
It sounds terrible, and I had to work past the name.
Was it a documentary or was it a horror movie?
It wasn't. It's actually neither, and that's what's strange about it, is that it is like a British kind of mystery, sort of, but then even that was characterized as a mystery, like it was in the mystery genre.
I think I see where you're going with this, by the way. Is this going to be a segue into a story of how we first met?
Well, I did think about
the fears?
That's actually what I thought about. Yeah. Okay. So we will come back around to that. But it is interesting that it ended up having very little to do. Like the name is it's a rename. It's one of those like, oh, it was a British film, but when it was Americanized, they changed the name and changed the ending somehow.
Right.
In the 90s. And so it was called Shades of Fear. And it's this story about, I don't know, based on that name alone, I was like, oh, this is going to be kind of like an Agatha Christie type British mystery.
Right.
And it was a great cast. So I start watching it and it becomes very clear right away that it should not be called Shades of Fear. At the time I had no idea.
What's it about?
At the time I had no idea that it was about that was a different title, that it's not its original title. The original title turns out, after I did a little research after the fact, is called Great Moments in Aviation. Just to show you the difference.
Why is that
between
turned into Shades of Fear?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's no like how do you go down that road?
Right.
And it's a story about it's an ocean liner. It's an ocean liner story. It takes place on a boat is
okay.
What I guess I'm getting at.
But wait, it takes place on a boat.
It takes
and
place
called,
on a boat. Shades what? Of Fear. Great Moments
of
in Aviation.
Aviation.
It's a story. It's the boat. The boat starts in the Caribbean in Grenada.
Okay.
Grenada.
Potato,
patata. Frittata. And it's traveling to England. And it's the main character is this Caribbean woman who is allegedly going to find her fortune and meet with her husband, to whom she's already married, who has been working in London. So she's black, and her husband, who's also black, has been working in some sort of a service industry in London.
Okay.
And she is ostensibly boarding this ship to travel to be with him.
Okay.
And she ends up in this in her cabin. Her first name is Gabriel. Her name is Gabriel Angel. And they think that she's so the stewardship, whatever, they assume she's a man. So she ends up in the same cabin, this tiny cabin with bunk beds, with Jonathan Pryce's character.
Oh,
I love Jonathan Pryce.
What year is it? What,
this is
from
like
the
90s? Yeah, this is like 92 or something.
Okay.
Although it feels older, and it's also set in the 50s.
I know, it sounds like a real like Imitation of Life kind of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner kind of thing.
Yeah, it's I don't even know how, it's a hard movie to describe, and it's not successful in several ways, but so Jonathan Pryce is her cabin mate, and he's sort of mysterious,
right?
And there's a little sort of like a question of his real identity, and then John Hurt is in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of trying to figure out who Jonathan Pryce is and thinks he may be someone from his past.
Right.
Like, you look very familiar. That's a terrible British accent. And then Vanessa Redgrave's in it. So when I was reading that, I was like, oh my God, Jonathan Pryce, John Hurt, and Vanessa Redgrave, done. Like, I'll totally watch it. I love those guys. And so it's this very strange movie that just doesn't end up being about what you think. It's not even really a mystery. It's more about this kind of blossoming relationship between these two characters, this black woman and this British man who's pretending to be Scottish.
Right.
And the Great Moments in Aviation comes in because she actually is an aviatrix, because her grandfather was a pilot. He essentially flew like crop dusting planes, and he would go out when none of the white flyers would go out in terrible weather. So that's how he learned to be able to, and got a job to be a pilot.
Right.
And he taught her how to fly. So she wants to become a pilot in Britain. So it's actually this wonderful feminist, like race positive kind of great story.
Right.
And as I said, it doesn't completely succeed. But when I was researching it today, because I cared about it so much that I wanted to talk about it on the podcast,
right?
I found out that Jeanette Winterson wrote this film.
Oh, no kidding.
Who that is?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love her.
Yeah.
And I had no, it wasn't paying attention to the credits, so I had no idea she wrote it, but it really makes a lot of
sense.
Like
it was based off of a book of hers?
Or no, she wrote the actual film.
Oh, yeah, okay.
She wrote the film just as a screenplay after the success of Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit for the BBC. But like her books, Sexing the Cherry and The Passion and a couple of other her other novels are like some of the best books I've ever read.
Right. I haven't read any of her stuff, interestingly enough. And along with like Bell Hooks and stuff, like she, yeah, when I was like way into Pen Pals and Riot Girl and stuff, like she was, and sadly I haven't, shamefully. I mean, I've read, when I went to college, I double majored in journalism and sociology. With a concentration of gender and sexuality. So when I was in women's studies classes, I had to read a lot of... we didn't read her. I did read a lot of Bell Hooks.
God, I can't believe they never had you read her. I'm so excited for you to read her.
Because I think it was more like feminist theory. Like, it was way more academic-minded than kind of like prose-ish. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it was like her and Judith Butler and like things like that. Like more hardcore academic. But
yeah,
yeah, sadly, when I was a teenager, I kind of didn't get that into it. It was really, I mean, like I read all the time, but I was reading stuff about, you know, music or whatever.
Sure, sure.
Like not as academically minded as I should have been.
Well, I'm not here to chide you for that, but I
But that is interesting. And that is a book. It's like the kind of thing that's been on my list forever and a day to read, you know.
You should read Orange Is Not the Only Fruit, but I will tell you, if I may control your experience of Jeanette Winterson now
please
that
do.
I've invited myself in to that responsibility. I think I want to start you on, Written on the Body. I should start you
instead
on
Orange
on
Is Not the Only Fruit? Because everybody has always said that that's something I
written
should read.
Written on the Body is one of the most beautiful and beautifully written books I have ever read. It's sexy and strange, and I don't know if any of you listeners have read it, but it's kind of heady reading. You know, it's not particularly funny at all.
Right.
But it's a non-gender specific narrator. So you know that the narrator is in love with a woman, but you have absolutely no idea through the entire book if the person writing is a man or a woman.
Right.
I mean, obviously, you know, Jeanette Winterson's a woman, but
right.
And it's really artfully done. And I mean, it is really sexy, guys, in a very poetic, gorgeous prose sort of way. I can't say enough good things about it. And I did actually think, and I wanted, well, and that there I did sort of draw the parallel where I was like, because I knew obviously what you studied in college. So I was fairly sure that you would have read her. Now I'm really excited that you haven't and that you can. There's this one thing that happens in the movie that it's close to the beginning, but there's a scene when this Gabriel Angel when she's getting ready to leave her home, her family in Grenada. They throw this wonderful feast for her. And mm-hmm. I actually was looking up online to see if I could find out what it was based on, assuming that it was based on real tradition, real cultural tradition, because it really impacted me. It's her, you know, she's got this family and her family of friends and her mom, I think it was her mom, not her grandmother, sitting around this feast, kind of celebrating that she's going away. And then at the end of the dinner, each person from the table comes up and says, I touch you with bravery so that you may, you know, cross the ocean with, you know,
and like security each person does a different
thing. And then someone else comes up and says, I touch you with children so that you may blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And it was such a beautiful, like, blessing sort of ceremony. And I just thought, God, I don't have anything like that really in my life in that way. But I recently went to my friend's baby shower, and she sort of had a similar thing where she had everyone sit in a circle, and then all of the people who had been parents in the circle, she had them sort of give her a piece of advice or like some, you know, sort of, and she cheekily said, like, it's kind of like a blessing, but she was very lighthearted about it.
Right.
And I just think that's so, I just love the community of that, the idea of like each person touching you giving you the gift of something.
Right. Right.
You know? So anyway, I just wanted to say,
I'll have to put that in my queue.
I thought that was cool. Yeah. I thought that was cool. April, thanks for putting up with all of that. That was 10 minutes.
Oh my God. I'm so glad it's over.
Jeanette Winterson, Shades of Fear. Why is it called Shades of Fear? I still don't know.
Yeah, that is pretty funny. But no, I'll definitely put it in my queue.
Here's something that I'm going to volunteer about you, okay. Which is interesting for me to this podcast, which is that you are one of my friends who I feel like a lot of who you are contextually totally still vibes with exactly who you were when you were a teenager. Like,
yes.
There's a real consistency of your interests and your passions and stuff. There's a real consistency to who you were then.
A lot of people call it immaturity, but yes.
I would not characterize
it as such. There is consistency.
But I just think that's really cool, especially for this podcast, because you're just like, I just feel like, oh, if I had met you, if we had met in high school, we totally would have gotten along the same way we do now.
Yeah,
and
probably.
And we just would have like...
Yeah.
Seen and known and understood each other in pretty much the exact same way, because you just knew what you liked from a really young age.
Yeah. I kind of did. Not a lot has changed. And that could be good or bad, but as far as just like my core interests, really, yeah.
Let's talk about that. Why don't you acquaint the wonderful listeners with what I'm talking about?
Well, it's weird to talk about and not sound like I'm not trying to sound cocky, because of course as a teenager I was just as awkward and weird or whatever as you're supposed to be, but I was kind of okay with it. Like, I kind of was always just like, I'm into weird stuff and that's just how it is, and I wasn't apologetic or ashamed or, you know, when I was I was a teenager in like, you know, early to mid 90s, and so I'm still obsessed with I was obsessed with Morrissey and the Smiths. There's still a lot of stuff I was obsessed with, but I was very much like alternative when it really meant something. Like, you know, I very much watched 120 Minutes and dressed like the Deal Sisters.
It feels
and like
really cool to have been. It feels like it was a good time.
It was, wasn't it? Because it was like. But the weird thing is, I was super into that stuff, and I very much considered myself, I guess, alternative or whatever, as dumb as that sounds now. Like, that was kind of my thing, and I was into, you know, Morrissey and The Cure and, you know, whatever. But weirdly, I was also at the same time, I was watching 120 Minutes, but then also Yo! MTV Raps. I was, like, way into rap. I still am, too. But I was just way into these things, and I wrote zines and that stuff, too. And
I want to get more into that in depth in a second, but
yeah, I was way into zines, and I was into punk rock and stuff too. I'm still into a lot of things, and it never occurred to me. Like, I was always weird, and I always like knew I was weird or whatever, but it wasn't I just was like, oh, this is just how it is. I don't know how to explain it. Like, it's not.
Listen, that is completely makes sense, and it goes back to. She's so tired of me telling this story. Every time I introduce April to anyone that I meet, I'm like, listen, you got to know about this girl right now. I don't know why I'm like, I've championed April professionally and personally like I've never championed any of my friends. She's the kind of person that makes me wish I were a talent agent almost. We met at a storytelling show, and she told a story, and it we may even get into what her story was about in a little bit, but it wasn't so much even the story, but like, you're so tired of me saying this. I use this word to describe April like nobody's business, but she's so authentic. And she just...
Thank you.
It's just one of those things, guys. And I bet... And if you've seen her on Chelsea, I'm sure you agree with me, and you probably know other people like this, but, you know, sometimes you just meet someone and you just feel... You have this sense that their feet are on the ground and they know who they are. And I it doesn't surprise me anything that you've just said about your relationship to your interests and stuff when you were in school and even that young, because you definitely give off a vibe of like, I have known who I am for a really long time. And I think a lot of people who've done the podcast have said, I didn't know that, or I had a sense of it, but I didn't get to explore it until my 20s or what have you. And I just, you just feel like you know yourself.
I mean,
in such an appealing way to me. That's
but
how
it's
I
not,
feel.
I mean, it's weird to talk about because it makes it sound like, oh yeah, I was born with my shit together. Like, it's not like that. Right. It's just like, I knew what I liked. I knew what I was into. I knew what I thought was fun. And I just did it. And it was the kind of, like, don't get me wrong. Like, I got made fun of at school. Not hardcore. Like, this is going to blow your mind more. But, like, I loved high school. Like, I loved it. And I had a ton of fun. That isn't to say I didn't get made fun of, and that isn't to say I wasn't a weirdo or whatever, but it was just the kind of thing where I was like, I'm just a weirdo. You guys just, if you don't think it's cool, I'm a weirdo, I don't really care, and I'm just going to do what I think is fun anyway. And I think in a weird way, I got, like, respect for that.
I think,
like,
that makes sense.
I was totally... Nowadays, like, to be weird is so affected and on purpose. Like, it makes me sound like it was just... I just what? Like, whatever. It wasn't, like, this calculated thing. But I was friends equally with... There was never an us versus them thing to what I was into. Like, I knew I was into stuff that wasn't necessarily considered cool by, like, the cool set in high school, as it is dictated by every movie, like the cheerleaders or the football players or whoever's popular.
Put this in context in terms of...
This is in Atlanta. This is, like, in suburban Atlanta, suburban Georgia. Suburban Atlanta, Georgia. Yeah. I grew up in the South. I grew up in a totally, like, upper middle class high school. But I didn't...
Was it conservative? Was it the community kind of conservative? Or was it...
Not oppressively so. I don't think so. I mean, yes, but not... It's hard...
Your family is very different from you, I guess, is what I...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My mom is very Southern and very proper, but also cool. Like, she was never... She totally supported me. She didn't wildly, crazily support me like those stories you read where people were like, I knew at 14 I wanted to be an actor, and my mom was like, cool, drop out of school. Like, it wasn't, like, crazy, but she also wasn't, like, she was cool with me doing my thing. Like, in high school, I had blue hair, and I would wear, like, green fishnets and Doc Martens, and she was like, all right, if that's... She wasn't jazzed about it, but she wasn't, you know, it wasn't that weird to her. She was like, okay, you're kind of weird. That's cool. But yeah, it was a conservative environment, but not... I didn't ever feel oppressively so. And I think because my attitude was never... I mean, I had a lot of, like, punk friends and stuff, and they were very much like, you know, fuck everybody who's not like us kind of thing, like, fuck the preps or whatever. And I was like, I don't care, like, if that's what they're into. And so...
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you're...
I kind of had friends in, like, every clique.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, the people I got made fun of by the most were, like, other... punk kids.
Interesting.
For, like, not being punk enough. Like, I'm not joking. Sense. Like, they... When in ninth grade, when I was a freshman, there was this group of senior girls who used to make fun of me ruthlessly. Like, we had the same lunch period, and they would make fun of me, and they would pass me notes that were just so terrible. And, like, you don't know anything about what you think you're into and all this stuff. Cause I was like, you guys are supposed to be on my team. If anything, it's supposed to be us versus them. Like, they were the meanest to me. That was the weirdest part. So, you know, especially after that, it just reinforced my, like, yeah, I don't, it's not us versus them. It's like, just do what you want. Like, who cares?
But I think it's interesting because that's why, one of the reasons I know that we would get along, because I had the sort of same experience where I was so attracted to the kind of punk rock culture and, like, mm-hmm. the goth world.
Yeah.
But I never, I felt a lot of anger. I didn't really know at who. I mean, I definitely had that kind of, I don't know if it was, like, hormonal anger or just like my weird mental issues that I've struggled with my whole life. But I didn't have the feelings of anger the way, like, my friends who are obsessed with the Sex Pistols did.
Right.
Did want to, like,
absolutely
fight with people. And, like, you know, they wore, like, that my first boyfriend wore, like, super, like, basically what football players wear under their eyes.
Right.
Like, giant, like, an inch thick of black. Black soot.
Totally had those friends too, and I think because
I think they resented me that I wasn't more angry. They were like, "Why aren't you pissed?"
Exactly. Pissed. Well, and my introduction into, like, punk rock and stuff was actually, like, Billy Bragg and the Clash, and they had and I got into it more politically, and they, I think, had my introduction been something like the Sex Pistols, like, maybe I would have. But because I was listening to people like Billy Bragg, who their overall message is like, we're all in this together. Like, we all need to work together to make shit better. That was always kind of where I was coming from first with it. Like, it was like, you know, I was listening to them, and because of that, like, wanting to read more like Karl Marx and stuff, where it was all like collectivism and like, we all have a common enemy. It's not each other. It's like the ruling class. And so that sounds super heavy. Like, whatever. Again, I wasn't like this genius teenager. I'm just saying that was my introduction to punk rock. So...
But I think it does speak well. I mean, listen, I'll continue to champion you through the podcast, and you can shit on yourself as much as you want to. But I do think that taking it to that next level where you were listening to what was being sung about and you were interested to the point where you were pursuing the information that had inspired those people also, There's a thoroughness to that and an intellectualism.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's something that's still, when I get into something, I'm like balls to the wall. Like, okay, I like this thing. Now I need to know everything about it. Everything that this person has ever done in their life. Like, yeah, that's definitely, I mean, especially with like record collecting stuff. If I find like, you know, if I like this band and then I find out somebody in the band was in another band, I'll go buy all their records. And yeah, I still do that too. And I think, but I mean, I identified with these weird people like Morrissey or whatever, but they never, they were weird, but it was a kind of a, they knew they were weird and it was like, fine, we're weird, we'll deal with this. But they did have this kind of thing where they wanted to feel comfortable. They were like, I just want somebody to understand me. I just want somebody to understand where I'm coming from. And so I kind of felt that way too, where I was like, okay, I'm into things that not a lot of people I know in real life are into, which that's why I had tons of pen. I think another reason why I didn't care if I got made fun of or whatever was I knew I would go home to this whole other world. I was like, I don't care if you guys make fun of me. Yeah, I'm going to go home that, and write to that my pen pals.
That ties into the zines and the pen pal thing too. And you know, the only other time we've discussed pen pals on the show was, of course, Natasha's episode.
Yeah,
she talked about calling her Irish pen pal a loser for funny. Not having electricity.
I didn't. That never happened with me.
You weren't beating up anybody verbally.
It's true. Well, most of my pen pals were through music. Basically, okay, I got into the Smiths. The Smiths and R.E.M. were my first favorite bands
and
ever.
Did you feel a pridefulness about like R.E.M.?
Oh my God, absolutely. Being
ours,
from Georgia,
they belong to us.
Oh, totally. I used to go to Athens all the time and have like people's older siblings like drive me to Athens and stuff all the time. But yeah, I got into the Smiths actually when I was like 12 because these friends of my parents, who were my parents' age, they had a kid that was older than me who was getting married. And I remember being over at their house and he just gave me a whole box of cassette tapes and was like, oh, I'm not going to take these to my new house with my wife. Do you want them? And I was like, yeah. And so I fished out, like I listened to tons of stuff in it. And then I fished out Louder Than Bombs. It was in there. And then that was it. I'm like, who is this? This is the best thing I've ever heard. So it snowballed from there. So that was when I was like 12. When I was 13, I remember I got my first Morrissey fanzine at this record store called Criminal Records in Atlanta. Because my friend Brett's older sister used to drive us to this place in Atlanta called Little Five Points, which was like where the alternative kids hung out and still do. It's still the same kind of place with all the record stores and stuff. So I remember buying the zine and it was photocopied and it was kind of like, I could do this. Like, this is easy. And my parents, like my mom worked at this business where she would let me use the photocopier for free. So then I just started my own zine. My first fanzine was when I was 14 and it was a Morrissey and Michael Stipe fanzine. So that's how it started. Like, I just started making that at my mom's office. And then through the thing about zines at the time is like there would be ads in the back of each of them, like pen pal ads or ads for other zines. And so I just started writing to everybody. Like, I didn't know anybody at school who was like as into Morrissey as I was. So I was just eager to talk to anybody about it. So I'd write introductory letters to all these people like, hey, I'm April. I'm super into Morrissey too. Let's be pals, whatever. So then it just for real just snowballed.
I mean, there's just so... I love the idea of this one thing is so important to me that I'm fairly certain we will have other things in common.
Oh, sure,
or
yeah.
We don't, you know what I mean? I love the fierceness of loyalty to one thing that, I mean, I guess in the, it's funny because there's something almost like when in the wrong context, there's something sort of foreboding about it. Like there is this, because you can almost imagine how it would work to the opposite effect. Like we all hate this one thing. So we have
right.
all this stuff.
So
to
it connects
you know,
us.
It could
yeah.
be, it could be very dark in a sense, but the light version of it is so appealing and so charming of, you know, it's not just like, you know, Kurt Vonnegut, what does he call it? Like wampeters and grand falloons, this idea of, you know, being on, I think it's in Cat's Cradle. Like you meet someone who's from the same city and you're on a plane together and suddenly you're best friends, but
right.
really you're not at all. Cause there's not enough in common about just being from the same city. It's
right.
Like,
right.
Oh, we're both from here. Remember
and
that
then,
place?
Yeah,
on blah,
yeah,
blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah.
And like, that's, it's all that. And it's
right.
not emotional, but when it's something like music and poetry mm-hmm. and a point of view and the politics of it and all that, and that it just, you're so immersed in it that it becomes such a huge part of your life.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
like, if someone else feels this passionately about this one thing,
right,
we'll definitely bond and we'll it'll be meaningful and we'll have things to talk about.
Well, right. And also because of especially like the depth of Morrissey's lyrics. I mean, anybody listening to this who doesn't like him is probably making the jerk off hand motion like, whatever, that guy sucks. But, and I get people who don't, I understand somebody wouldn't like Morrissey and hate him. I totally get it.
I'm not that big of a fan of Morrissey. Right. So we're not going to sit here and extol his virtues because I like him, but I certainly don't have strong feelings.
But I will say, as far as like lyricists, like the depths of his, like they did, they're pretty intellectually, you know, this isn't like, let's go to the party, DJ, turn the music up. So it's like, if you were really into it, more likely than not, you would have also like read books that you could tell he was influenced by. And that was the thing, is I've read so many books about him and read so many interviews with him that, yeah, at the time when I was 15, like I'm reading all these things about how he read Oscar Wilde and like all of these.
And I do, by the way, love
Oscar. I was like his favorite writer. So when I was 15, I was just like, then I'm like, well, I got to read Oscar Wilde. This guy's into it. And you know, I've got to watch all of these. He was way into like 60s English kitchen sink movies, like Saturday Night and Sunday Morning and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, as a teenager, I was also seeking that out. So I knew that if I was going to write to somebody who was also that into him, we would also have those things to discuss. But weirdly enough, though, through that, and so I'm getting all these pen pals, and I'm getting more and more zines. And then I started getting personal zines. So
Can I ask you one quick question?
Yeah, yeah.
Because maybe someone else is curious about this as well. So it's a whole zine, and it's about, your zine is about Michael Stipe and about Morrissey.
Yeah.
And it's your, and it's just you writing, and it's,
it was just me,
it's
writing.
It's not just to be clear to anybody who's not familiar. I'm drinking sparkling water, guys. I just burped. I'm so embarrassed. I've really thrown every common decency to the wayside. Like, oh, I'm
burping.
I'm like 20 episodes in now. I can do whatever I want. So it wouldn't just be like, okay, here's the essay about how much I love Morrissey, and then here's the essay about Michael Stipe. It would be broken up into different pieces, and like, how was it structured, and how did you
very
approach
loosely
your love of Michael Stipe?
I wasn't like Jan Winner or anything. I mean, I was like 14, but yeah, there would be things where I'm like, here's why I think he's great. But then, as was common also in other fanzines, it would be like lyrical analysis or album reviews or live reviews, things like that.
Okay.
But yeah, there would be the occasional, like, they're just really cool, right, guys? Here are some reasons why. Like, you know what I mean?
I love it.
Yeah. But through that, I got tons of Morrissey pen pals, tons of zines. It was great. But then through that, it kind of snowballed into other just music zines that I would get from all over, which is how I got like my record collection, because I'd get these pen pals and I'd get these zines introducing me to new bands, and then they would make me mixtapes. And, you know, I was getting exposed to all the stuff that as a teenager in Atlanta, Georgia, this is pre-internet. I mean, this is pre-internet. So
it's like internet.
Yeah. This was exposing me to things I never would have known otherwise. And then through that, I started getting into personal zines, which this is around when like Riot Girl's happening. So then that got me into feminism more than anything would have otherwise. So, you know,
I love that music was such a way in for you.
Absolutely.
For so much more than just the music itself.
That's the thing. Absolutely. And so when people, I mean, yeah, even people I meet today, I'm 33, you know, and people will meet me and go, how are you still into this stuff? Like, this is so weird. Who cares about this anymore? And I'm like, yeah, but it isn't just listening to this album. Like, you know, I could tell you where I was when I first heard this. I could tell you the book that I read because I heard this album. I could tell you the person that I met who introduced me to this album, who then I went to visit them at their house, who then, you know what I mean? That's like so much tied to it. So much more than just being like, yeah, I like this song. Like,
yeah, you know what? And you know what I think is interesting about some of the bands that you're talking about? You guys, I know that I always ask these questions of you. And by the way, I seriously cherish and love when you answer my questions. I know that you think they're rhetorical, but for those of you who have written and said like, hey, this is how, you know, we talked, Jessica St. Clair and I talked a lot about mixtapes and stuff, and whether or not like the youth is out there making mixes the same way we used to,
right,
with cover art and all that kind of stuff. First of all, one listener sent me a mix. It's one of the coolest things I've ever gotten.
I still have every mixtape I've ever gotten.
You do
like
too.
In three
so does
bins
Jessica.
Under my bed.
So does Jessica.
Yeah.
And I don't, and I hate that I don't. But those of you who answer and say like, oh yeah, you asked if how guys feel about blah, 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 and then like eight guys will answer me. It's just like the best feeling in the world. So please know that I mean it when I say it. Having said that, I completely lost my train of thought. I forgot what I was asking the listener.
Mixtapes,
zines, crap, pen pals. I can't remember. I'm sorry. I derail, but I'll get it back. But yeah, the idea of it. Oh, I was gonna say, it seems, I was gonna say, I don't know if it's still like this with music, that like, I don't know, like being a teenager and being super into a band. But what I was gonna say earlier about the time frame that we were super into music when we were teenagers is, mm-hmm. I felt like, as much as I looked up to those bands, like I looked up to the Pixies and I looked up to Depeche Mode.
Oh my God, I love Depeche Mode.
Absolutely. That seems like, for some reason, a weirder band for me to look up to. But I also felt, I mean, even someone like Tori Amos, who for me, I think I said on a different podcast, was a phase, and for other people has been I want to say 1 year phase of Tori.
Right.
But using her as, I think, a decent example, as well as the other bands, is that I think I still felt included, and I felt there was a permission to like think of them as peers, even as I was looking up to them. And I think that was really empowering for that time in music. And I'm not saying that it doesn't continue to be that way, but I guess I'm curious because now they are my peers or younger.
Right.
But at the time when I was 15, even though there were bands that I loved that were in their 30s, I kind of felt like they were inviting me to
hang
with them.
Yeah, they got it.
They were inviting me.
They got it.
There was an agelessness to it.
Absolutely.
That I really appreciate. And I feel like, oh, I'm so glad that I got to feel like they were my buddies in a weird way.
Oh,
even though,
totally.
Right. I hope people still feel that way that are young.
Think about that now, because I do think about how there's not, I mean, this makes me sound old and so like, you know, walked in the snow uphill both ways, but now with the ease, like if I wanted to get something like a specific record, like it was a mission, like I had to have a friend drive me to the record store and I had to have my list and be like, kid, do you have this record? Oh, it's an import, can you order it for me? Like it was just this huge ordeal, so much so that when I finally got it, I'm like, well, I better love this because I went through all this to get it,
right?
Whereas now you can just click a mouse and have somebody's entire discography, which is great and convenient, and that's awesome for kids. But then I wonder, you know, there is that little like, do you appreciate it or is it just like throw away, which is stupid, whatever, it's music and music should be listened to by people, that's what it's made for. But
no, but I will say I said the same thing. I've talked about this a little bit with Jessica as well, who, by the way, was not a music person. So mm-hmm. we were having the conversation about it because the only reason that she even knows what she likes is that she has her best friend makes her mixes and
right.
sort of creates the soundtrack for her life, which I love.
Right.
But I, like you, was a huge, I mean, I definitely wasn't as hardcore as you were, but I was close. I mean, I definitely was like super, super into music and record stores and buying imports and
right.
ordering like every Sugar Cubes import.
Oh my God. Right. Totally.
Stuff like that. But I, one of the questions that I asked on that podcast, I think it was do younger people still know everything about bands like I used to with reading the liner notes and
right.
knowing their lives? And I will call someone out by name. Jocelyn is a listener who took the time to write in and say, yes, I can tell you, I have like six bands that I'm obsessed by.
Oh, well,
I can
that's
tell
good.
You every band name. Every band member, their history, like every song, every, you know,
that's,
and I was
comforting.
So relieved.
Yeah,
I know.
Definitely.
I was like, oh, good.
Yeah. Because no, I wondered that too. Because I wonder, you know, people get things on iTunes now where there's not even really liner notes, or
I'm like that. I'll have like a song I can't stop listening to, and I realize like I never bothered to go back and get the entire album.
Oh, I've never used iTunes. I've never used
Bless
it.
Bless your heart.
I still go to like Amoeba and stuff. I mean, I'm still so cool. Like grumpy, like Nick Hornby kind of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I still
Good
do
reference.
That.
Yeah. I don't really. I'm ashamed to say.
Yeah. I don't know if that's definitely another thing I haven't grown out of, because I just have so many, you know. I meet a lot of people my age again who are just like, I don't get why you're still into this and don't understand like the life changingness of it and how it was. I mean, yeah, okay, I was weird or whatever in high school. But I had friends. I wasn't like this completely ostracized nerd or whatever. But the best times I remember were in my room, like reading letters from people, writing letters to people, like absorbing these mixtapes that people made for me and you know, being like, oh, this is great. I got to find this album. And like, those are some of my fondest memories of my teen years. So, you know, I still kind of associate music with that.
And you ended up having relationships with these pen pals that extended out beyond the correspondence.
Yeah.
And you would meet
them. I've met tons of them, yeah.
So talk about that a little.
Yeah, I had pen pals all over the world. Again, it just kind of snowballed from the Morrissey thing. And then, well, when I started reading like zines, like personal zines, which were primarily made by other girls my age and like Riot Girl stuff, a lot of, they were really personal, and it was almost like your diary, you know, but in zine form. So it was an easy way. I mean, you read it and you really think, oh my God, like I know a lot about this person. And you would write letters. I mean, it was interesting. You would write letters to people telling them things that like you would never even tell people that you knew in real life. So, you know, I still know a lot of pen pals today. We've hung out, like I keep in touch with a lot of them. And then, so I've made real and lasting friendships via that medium. But then also it was awesome to have people I knew in like every country. Like you could name a country and I'd be like, I know somebody who lives there. I can go stay at their house.
I just think that.
So I would go
amazing.
All over and see bands and stuff and be like, hey, I just write and be like, I'm going to come see so-and-so. Can I come stay at your house? And it would just be
and
like,
throw
yeah.
throw out some places like that you went when you were a teenager that you would never
like,
have gone otherwise.
Well, England I went to a million times, like England and Scotland and Italy. Yeah, I had pen pals in Canada. I mean, I had pen pals all over the states.
How did you get the money to
do well.
That? Were you working?
Well, yeah, I would use all allowance. I had to have a job since I was 15. Like, my parents were very, I mean, they were total Southern work ethic. Like, you have to get a job. You're 15. So I had a job ever since I was 15. So I would just basically.
What jobs?
My high school job was working at the Hello Kitty store in our local mall, which also was convenient because it just provided me with all the stationery that I could write to all these pen pals on. It's kind of proud of me. I had a pretty great life.
Kitty store. You did have a great life.
That was my high school job. So I worked at the Hello Kitty store and, yeah, I mean, I would just say, obviously, you know, I'm living with my parents. I didn't have expenses, so I would just save money to do these things. Like, almost all of my money just went to go see shows. And
were you a good student?
No, I was the worst. Because
you
I didn't
spending
do...
all your time doing all
exactly. Like,
stuff.
I never did any schoolwork ever, ever, ever. All I did was, like, write. And I Sassy Mag, I wanted to be Jane Pratt. So that was the other thing too. Sassy magazine came right. I got a subscription to Sassy when I was like 13, which I was too young for their demographic, but it was the perfect time because they also talked about zines and they were, you know, alternative and stuff like that. And yeah, so I just did nothing but just write non-school things. I wrote and wrote and wrote and read all the time, but it was just never
were your teachers
school.
Did your teachers have an awareness of that? Were they like, April, we know that you're smart.
Yeah,
you
they very much
yourself?
Did. That was the weird thing is that like, the only thing I ever got in trouble for growing up was grades because I also never drank. I never smoked. I never like partied in those ways of a teenager. Like I was a dream kid, but I never did any work. So I was constantly grounded for my grades, which I remember in like my junior year because I was just grounded all the time.
Because
I
all
never
these pen pals and you could
exactly.
Just be in
so
your
I remember
room
my junior
like,
year just being like,
itself.
You know that grounding. I was like, Mom, listen, grounding is not working. Like I really did. I was like, clearly,
all you're doing is
you see this is not working.
More time,
yeah.
Right? That's
I was
really
like,
funny.
I'm not into school as far as the schoolwork. It's not getting done because I don't want to do. When I was in eighth or ninth grade, a teacher called my mom and was like, we think April should be medicated. We think she has ADD. And we had a meeting and I was like, I absolutely do not have ADD. I'm choosing not to pay attention to your class. Like, it's not a medical, like, I'm conscious of it. I'm doing it on purpose. And the woman was like, well, and so, yeah, because I was like, I don't want to be on medication. I'm fine. I just am not into this, which is a bratty thing. But my teacher, surprisingly, like, I was really nice. Like, I was totally the class clown and I totally made jokes and stuff.
I mean,
but I was weirdly like nice about it.
Everything you've said on the podcast thus far, just you've already explained it in your behavior. It's clear that you're a very nice person. It's clear that you're.
I mean, I was disruptive.
Humble. It's clear that you know what I mean. But like, it's just the person who's talking on this podcast right now. We can all picture that same person.
It was me at 15,
being that kid at 15.
It was weird.
Sense.
It didn't make sense at the time. The teacher should have hated. Like, I got terrible grades. I didn't pay attention. Whatever. But I made them laugh, and I was not mean about it.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. I mean, it's mean
totally
to disrupt a class,
it.
Like on principle. But they kind of didn't hate me. They were disappointed. Like they would just hand me report cards and be like, "What you? This is I don't understand, but whatever. Like have fun ruining your life. Like I mean, it was kind of like hey, you're gonna do it. So
yeah.
And I can't believe I went to college because I graduated and did not even have a 2.0. Wow. Like it was, I failed everything. I went to, I had to go to summer school every year. I failed every math and science class.
But your parents still let you travel and let you go to... Weird.
Yeah, because I think that they, and that makes it sound like they're a bad parent. I mean, my parents were kind of, my mom hated it. Like my mom would cry to me and be like, well, you have to get a good grade. Like, why are you not doing anything? And I just... Yeah, so I wasn't a good kid in that respect because I just would be like, I'm not into it, Mom. Like but in a weird way, I was like, I'm going to be okay, though, I think. Which is so arrogant. Like, a teenager being like, oh, I'm failing everything, but I'll be great. Like, that's so arrogant and terrible. And it is bratty, but...
Except you totally proved yourself right continuing on.
I'm not into this right now. I'll be fine. Like, trust... And, yeah, but don't get it twisted. Like, my mom was really upset and really not... I mean, she was appreciative, like I said, that I didn't get in trouble in the traditional ways that, like, rebellious teenagers get in trouble, but she was very upset that I never did any work and didn't get good grades. And then... But she's relieved now. Like, I actually went to college. I didn't go to college till I was 23, though. When I graduated from high school, my mom was like, oh, okay, are you going to at least please go to college? And I was like, oh, no. I said, if you, like, make me go to college right now, I will fail out. I guarantee you I will fail. Like, don't make me do it. And she was like, okay, well, you got to do something. Like, you can't just be chilling in my house then. And so I actually went to live in England for a couple of years, like, with a friend of mine that I had met. And she was okay with that. She came over and, like, met their parents and, like, you know, it was on the up and up. So but when I finally decided to go to college at 23, then I was like, okay, well, I'm into it now. And then, you know, it's college. You get to pick your class. Like, I got to study what I was interested in.
That
so,
does help for anybody who experienced a lack of interest in high school. A couple of things I wanted to ask. What came after the Hello Kitty store?
Well, after that, when I graduated from high school, I just had a series of jobs to be able to afford to stay in England. Basically what I did, because you can't just legally go live in England for 3 years without... So I would go to England for like 6 months, come home, have a job for like 3 or 4 months to make enough money, go back for like 3 or 4 months. Like, I did that off and on.
Were you working at all in England?
No, because I didn't legally... Like, I didn't want it... I didn't want to get deported or risk it. I was living with my friend Neil at his parents' house. Just kicking it.
Seeing bands.
Traveling England itself, like just going all over the country, hanging out with my friends. At that point, my friend Neil was also kind of not doing anything. Like, he had graduated and was not gone to university yet. So it was a kind of just like bro out time. And his parents still, they're like my second parents. So like, we're super close. So, you know, it was cool. I was just hanging out, going to see bands. His parents would cook me dinner at night. Like, it was great. But I just had a bunch of, in that period, I had a bunch of just shitty, like, I did telemarketing. I worked at an answering service. Just anything where I would work there for a few months, save up the money, and go back to England. So
you knew what you wanted.
I mean, I did, but it's like, it's the kind of thing where if I read or heard other people talk about that, I'd be like, like, who do you think you are? Kind of thing. I mean, it sounds like a dick move. It does. But I mean, I don't know. I just was interested in what I was interested in, and which makes it sound like I've got tunnel vision. Like, I feel like the one difference between me now and me then is I am more open to other things. I think as a teenager, I very much was like, I'm into this. If you're not into it, whatever. And I wasn't as open to different things. Whereas I think that is a difference now where I'm like, oh, I'll listen to music I wouldn't think I'd like before. I'll read a book that I didn't think I would like, or I'll watch a movie I didn't think I would like. I'm more open in that way.
Did you, I mean, I guess I'm not imagining this particular April, like being like going out and taking a bike ride or,
yeah. I mean,
did you like when you were a teenager, did you like being out of doors, or were you kind of like,
I did actually, the only, like,
don't ground me because, or you were, feel free to ground me because I'm just in my, I would be in my room by choice anyway.
Yeah, well, when I was, especially when I was a preteen, I think riding my bike was like the one thing I did all the time. That was like the one activity. Yeah, I would definitely, I was a pretty active kid. I wasn't like a legit goth. Like, yeah. I was pretty active and like outdoorsy. And the neighborhood I grew up in, we had a pool. We had like a neighborhood pool, and I would go hang out at the pool a lot and like, Yeah. I mean, yes, a great deal of time was spent in my room, like writing letters and stuff like that. But I was a reasonably active kid. I still like to go out and ride my bike and run around and stuff. But with like my Walkman on constantly. Sure. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You needed to have your soundtrack.
Yeah, exactly.
The soundtrack to all your experiences. What were you, I know that you had your aha moment, which is sort of funny because it would have been really cool if you discovered aha all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And like when my
moment was when I saw the Take On Me video. Exactly. I literally had not.
Was other non-alternative music, like, did you, like, as a kid growing up, did you love music, but you just didn't necessarily have a specific point of view? And did that sort of change for you when you were around 12? Or did you, do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I always
Morrissey
loved it.
Was 12. Like,
yeah,
I'm thinking of myself also when I think about this, like asking myself the same question.
Well, yeah, hearing the Smiths for the first time was definitely a turning point. I mean, and hearing REM too for the first time was like a definite, like the first tape I bought with my own money, with my allowance money, was Green.
Yeah.
And that was a turning point. But yeah, I always liked music. The first music I ever heard was Elvis. My mom is super duper into Elvis, and I am too, as an extension of that. But so that the first music I remember hearing is Elvis Presley. And then I grew up in the South, and both of my parents are, I mean, I come from generations of Southerners, so I grew up on country music. So I definitely remember, you know, growing up in like my parents watching the Grand Ole Opry and stuff like that. And my mom had like George Jones records and Merle Haggard and like real classic stuff. But at the time, I didn't like it because you couldn't like what your parents, I'm like, well, you guys, this sucks. Like, but as I got older in my late teens, I'm like, actually, this is super good. And I would get more into like Roger Miller and Loretta Lynn. And I still really like old country music. Contemporary country music, I always thought was awful. Like, yeah. I remember even in the, yeah, in the 90s, I did like Garth Brooks a lot. I loved Garth Brooks legitimately. And I saw him a couple of times when I was in high school. And that was the thing I totally got made fun of. And I'd be like, well, he's good. Like, who cares? He's good.
God, see, that is interesting. That's a real curveball. Speaking of things that are surprising,
right?
Because I don't remember. I'm not even sure I can remember a Garth Brooks song.
I was really into Rope in the Wind. I loved that album. I listened to all. I think that. I mean, that was a kind of another thing when I was a teenager. I was even like didn't have guilty pleasure. I was like, if it's good, I'll like it. And I think that's another reason why like the punk rock kids would get mad at me, because they're like, you can't like this guy. I'm like, well, it's a good album. Like, why can't I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't. I think I was not maybe as much like that. I think I was more concerned. I was more concerned than that about what other people would have thought. So even if I thought something was really great, it probably would have been a guilty pleasure.
Right.
But I think in the time frame when I was really at my most kind of like hardcore about any one thing, that being, I guess, kind of goth or punk.
Right.
I think I wouldn't even have allowed myself the guilty pleasure. Like,
right.
I think I shut off. I mean, I guess that's not really true, because I definitely still, like, I still love, like, Talking Heads and Sting and the Police, even when I was, like, super listening to My Life with a Thrill Kill Cult.
Right.
Like that. So I guess I did, but it wasn't, but I guess that was, like, that was sort of a through line where it was like, well, I'm always going to love that stuff.
Right.
But if it was something new, like Garth Brooks or something like that, I don't think I would have even allowed myself the opportunity to listen to it and like it. I would have just judged it out of hand and been like, nope, that's not part of who I am now.
I was super into Huey Lewis in the News.
Well,
oh my God, I was obsessed with sports.
I loved Huey Lewis.
Oh my God, that is one of my favorite albums of all time to this day.
I saw Huey Lewis in the News twice.
Oh, I saw him once.
And
but, yeah,
I told the story on Matt Price's music podcast, but I was looking at him through binoculars, and I still thought he was looking right at me.
Oh my God, I love him.
I was like,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure he's making eye contact with my binoculars. Meaningful, sexy eye contact.
That's so great.
With my binoculars.
That's so great.
Oh, I loved him so.
No, I did too.
And all the videos. I was like, God, these
videos
the best. Are genius.
The best videos.
Oh.
But at the same time, you're talking about goth. I dressed as Robert Smith for like 3 Halloweens in a row.
Yeah.
Like, I was still on that train too.
Yeah. There were a couple of guys at school who really had that nailed down. Like,
well, that was another thing.
Perfect Robert Smith hair.
In like 9th and 10th, I used
lipstick.
To dress like Morrissey. Like, to go to school.
Yeah.
Like, I would wear a blazer and a button down and turned up jeans and Doc Martens and just straight up dress like a dude, like, dress like Morrissey. Like,
look.
I wanted to be him.
Yeah.
So that was another thing where I kind of, like, people were like, okay, like, you know, you're a girl, right? But whatever.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that for a second, because I know that, you know, you talked about Oscar Wilde and you talked about Morrissey and Riot Girls and how all of that did in fact feed into the passions that you did pursue in college, including kind of gender classification and human sexuality and gender identity and stuff like that. So why don't you, so talk about that.
Well, yeah, I was kind of always fascinated with androgyny through Morrissey. Actually, Morrissey got me into David Bowie because he worships David Bowie. And so, you know, that's kind of how I found out about him. And, you know, Michael Stipe's kind of the same way. He would like wear makeup and kind of, I was always attracted to that too. I was kind of always attracted to people where you couldn't tell if they were girls or boys. Like, I just liked that, which is a weird thing, a weird kind of co-opty thing to say, because I'm not gay. And it's, so it's a weird, I'm not saying I fetishize that or whatever, but I feel like anybody who's, I think being androgynous is like so brave and challenging.
And I was too. And I love David Bowie. I loved Nick Rhodes. Like I love Nick Rhodes. I didn't even really like Duran Duran, but I liked him best.
I love Boy George.
Like
yeah.
Anybody who had that sort of like unabashed androgyny that wasn't necessary, but that wasn't necessarily homosexual, which isn't to say there's anything wrong with that, but it became somehow extra fascinating that it wasn't necessarily identified with sexuality, that it was
fucking with the system
in the sense.
Yeah. And I always found that super appealing. And I think that, I found it appealing and challenging and just like really, really at the time I had a kind of messed up view of femininity. I kind of did in a way that like, girls who weren't quote unquote tough kind of bothered me. Like I look back now on things that I felt and theories that I had, and like I'm kind of ashamed because, you know, that's anti-feminist if I ever heard, like, you know, the whole idea is you can be whatever the hell you want to be. But I remember having a kind of attitude that like, yeah, if a girl wasn't like Janine Garofalo or, you know, the Deal Sisters or something, then she was annoying and too girly. And like, that's weak. And that's really a fucked up view to have. Yeah. Now I'm like, oh, I'm so ashamed that I ever felt that way. But because like, so I think androgyny kind of appealed to me in that way too, where it was, you know, the idea of a guy kind of, I was always found appealing if like women dress like men, because I even did that too, and I fancied myself a bit tough and was like, yeah, it's cool to wear menswear or whatever. But then it was it really challenged me when I saw guys like dress effeminate and really kind of take that on and take that whole, well, this is a thing that's perceived as weak, but a guy's doing it, so, you know, just, I just liked that. That doesn't sound very academic or well thought out, but it was just something that just plainly always appealed to me. Yeah. And I think now, because nowadays, like ever since I graduated from college, I've taken the opposite where I'm like obsessed with clothes now, but in a very feminine, I wear dresses all the time. I'm like hyper feminine. And I like to do that because my mannerisms and my personality is so kind of not that. I just like anybody who takes that kind of dichotomy of like, maybe you're just like this wilting flat. Like Tilda Swinton, I think is amazing. Sure. She's probably like the chillest, most gentle, like soft-spoken lady in the world. But I love that she's so in your face, like, dresses like a dude. She's very David Bowie-ish. Sure. And that's so great.
Absolutely. And it's become so iconic in fashion for that reason.
I just like anybody who kind of takes those things and plays with them. And so I, you know, I'm totally conscious of that now in my everyday dress, where I'm like, okay, I know I say dude every other word. I know I like to watch, you know, movies about arm wrestling or something. So I'm going to wear like a pink dress to work. Like I just like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if that makes it very much.
No, it does. But sense, also, you put it into sort of a simple context in that way. But then, obviously, you know, we've established that when you were in school, you actually did study. You studied it. I mean, you did. It was academic for you.
It led to that because, I just like, I like reading about and knowing more about the traditional, you know, feminine, masculine roles that society has dictated and how people mess with them and how, you know, traits that are supposed to be female don't necessarily have to be, and traits that are supposed to be male don't necessarily have to be. And, you know, I can't. Yeah, it's hard to explain. And I don't sound very smart doing it, but I mean, I don't. It's just something that I love learning about. And I love, I love that in PU. I love meeting people who kind of buck the system. Like, I, you know, I'll love meeting a super huge muscular guy who cries at movies, or I'll love meeting a, you know, dainty lady who like curses like a sailor. I mean, those are very simplistic things.
Right. Well, you're giving, yeah. I mean,
that's boiling it down to like the examples. Most simple, but it's like, I just like that. I like my best friend is this guy, Chip, who's gay, but like nobody ever knows it. And that, and I love even Bucket, like, he doesn't act like a stereotypical gay guy, which is dangerous language. There is no stereotypical gay guy, but just in the way that he plays with masculinity and the fact that people think that being gay isn't a masculine thing, which in a way I'm like, it's actually hyper masculine. Right. Like, I just love questioning those kind of things.
Yeah, the layers. I think the layers and the sort of turning things in on themselves and still asking those questions. And, I feel like I turn your fears into too much of like a curiosity or like a just like a fun conversation starter, but I do love them. I just loved that story. It was such a perfect way to meet someone, that particular storytelling night, because speaking of the kind of the personal zines and stuff, like storytelling is so interesting because it's I wish, kind of making me want to go to more storytelling shows, actually. Because when I'm thinking about it, like, I don't necessarily see a lot of stand-up shows. Part of that is because I associate it so much with work because of producing Sketchfest. And also because I guess so many of my friends are stand-ups and I know they associate it with work. So it's not as much of a joyful thing that I can kind of disconnect from in the same way as storytelling. But I like storytelling because it's also not somebody playing a character per se.
Right.
And that it doesn't necessarily have to be like funny, hilarious jokes.
Right.
But that people's organic personalities are able to shine through in a very
specific way. Well, my zine was definitely like a precursor to my stand-up or to any sort of, I mean, it was just me trying to, once I started doing my own personal zine that wasn't like a fanzine, it was just like about me and stuff that went on. I mean, I did talk about music and like shows I went to and stuff like that, but it was very much me just trying to put a funny spin on what was going
on. That's so much of what your stand-up is. So that storytelling show, guys, just so you know, April ended up telling, I mean, I can't even remember what
the theme was. It was fear. I think it was
fear. Okay.
Yeah. I think.
I wonder
or
what,
something
I
to do with
because
fear.
Because for the life of me, I sure remember what you did. I could not tell you for the life of me what I did.
I totally remember. You were talking about walking along the bay and like wanting to jump in at night. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And like how you were afraid that you would actually do that.
I'm never sorry to make this about me. Everyone
knows
that.
No, I totally remember that.
Podcast, but I forgot about that because I never do storytelling shows and I was delighted to be asked. And I guess that must have been it. Yeah, because I do have that feeling. God, I totally forgot. That feeling of walking along the bay at night and knowing that there's a whole other world down there and feeling like it's so unnatural and I shouldn't be welcome in at all and that I could be eaten by a shark. And still wanting to jump in.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very interesting. It was still not as great as what you told,
I just listed my fears.
You listed your fears, but they're so list worthy because they're so specific and so interesting. And like I said, I feel bad because I don't want to turn actual fears into like a conversation piece. Like, look at quirky April.
Hey,
aren't her feels quirky?
I know they're weird, but
they're. I think I said your feels. Aren't your feels quirky?
Very quirky.
But they are kind of great and quirky. So now clearly we have to list them because I've brought it up.
Well, my number one fear. Should I do 3, 2, 1? Okay,
yes.
3. I'll do it from reverse order.
Greatest hits.
Number 3,
greatest hits.
Abandoned construction equipment. Look, I grew up in a place where there was a lot of construction around, especially if you drove by at night. I thought it was gonna be like Christine, where they're gonna start up and come after you. And what, you have no defense over like a crane. Like, no, it'll scoop you up and kill you. Like, that is terrifying to me. So just abandoned construction equipment that will guaranteed turn itself on at night and come kill you.
Yeah.
Number two.
But the point, but I will say quickly about your fears is I think the point of this and what we discovered pretty early on is that whereas I was saying I have a fear of the ocean at night, but I'm drawn to it. You are not drawn
to it.
Like this
absolutely
is not,
not.
This is not a situation where like people like horror movies and so they go see them and they like being scared.
No.
This is a situation where you will absolutely be
I do not
truly
like being scared at all.
And it'll be unpleasant if you saw abandoned farm equipment.
Yeah, I'm not into that at all.
Number two,
the ocean, not underwater, just underwater in general. Not a fan. We don't belong there. There are many signs that we don't belong there. It's scary. It's deep. There are vast areas of it that human beings will never, it's so vast and so deep that there are so much of it that human beings will never see any of the bottom of it. That's crazy to me to know that it's basically like the space, it's space on Earth.
Yeah. Yes.
That there's something on this Earth, this planet that we live on that we're unable to see all of.
And you have an absolute respect for that, clearly, but you're also
So I don't, and it's also, there are so many signs, like the deeper the humans get in the ocean, the scarier the creatures get. I mean, the deeper you go, the more there are fish with like chainsaws and lasers on their heads, because that's what they had to do to, in order to live there, to where it's like, if they've got to do that to adapt, we don't need to be there.
I love it.
Plus, if you go down deep enough and you decide you don't want to get there anymore and you want to get out of there, you get the bends. You get punished either way.
I know.
The ocean is not fucking around. It
I'm
doesn't
so
want you in it.
I'm fascinated by it.
It does
and,
not want
and
you
I
in it.
And I will say that the closest I come to that fear is still being on land. Like, I do like to be near it. And
I love the
be
beach.
Aware of it
I love the beach.
Yeah.
I'll go to the
but
beach
I'm
all
not,
day long.
But like, and I want to be able to like, maybe scuba dive, but I'll never be able to do it. I don't think so either.
The only way I was thinking, I was on my next hiatus, I wanted to go to Tahiti. I saw this thing on Tahiti and the water is so crystal clear that I was like, oh, this could be the one place on Earth.
But I think we talked about this. Somehow that scares me too.
Like, see that?
Oh, you're going to see it coming. You're
right.
You're just going to see it coming.
I think I just like to be aware. I feel like if I'm like, oh, I see this thing or I see the bottom of it, then it won't be. I'm not saying I'm going to go way out deep. But I feel like it's the one place on Earth where I could actually scuba dive a little bit and not lose my mind.
Or just maybe some snorkeling.
But if you, like, if you're trying to lower me into like the, you know, 20,000 league style where it's all pitch black, no, never happening.
Yeah.
Never happening. Hell no.
I don't know. Somehow, even with the clear water, somehow I have this creepy feeling that I would be like so loving all of seeing all of the beautiful creatures and then just some dark shadow.
Oh,
just like,
God, I'm going to have a nightmare about that
tonight.
And
then it would just be like, right? No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make it a nightmare. All right. What's number one?
Okay. Number one, definitely by far. And keep in mind, I grew up in the South.
Yeah.
Is Civil War ghosts. I'm sorry. That is true. I don't want to see ghosts in general, but Civil War ghosts. Because I grew up in Georgia. My parents legit live like 20 minutes from Kennesaw Mountain now, which was a battlefield. I've been to many a Civil War museum on school field trips. Nothing is scarier than that. It's like the war happened here. They got to be the most pissed off ghosts in history. I've been to the cyclorama in Georgia where they have in framed, like glass frames, you know, uniforms with bullet holes, blood stains where they had to saw limbs off. Like that was very regular practice. Like, how mad would a ghost be coming back? Like, I had my leg sawed off. I am pissed.
So
I'm hopping around.
But I mean,
we're
having a real conversation about this. My question is, are you afraid there might be Civil War ghosts, or are you certain that there are Civil War ghosts?
I'm pretty certain. If you go to certain places in Georgia, and that's the other
thing
too.
So you believe in the supernatural. That's what I'm proposing to you. I'm telling you that you believe in the supernatural.
Look. I've never seen, part of me wants to be like, of course I don't, how dumb. But if you go, there are so many places in Georgia with those historical like markers, you know what I'm saying? Like on the side of roads where it's like, the battle of whatever was fought here and 10,000 dudes died. Now they're really pissed off and probably walking around this field. Like those are so common in Georgia. And there are times that
you're telling me that the signs themselves say there are probably some angry.
No, but
ghosts.
I'm just saying,
beware of angry, and then it's spelled like this: G-G-D-, ghosts.
Totally like Scooby-Doo.
Yep.
No, I just, there are areas where you go and you're like, this does not feel right. There are certain houses. There are houses in Georgia, you know, where they have like a fireplace in the bedroom where you're like, this is totally a Civil War house. Civil War people lived here, and yeah. like it just feels weird and wrong. And
you feel an energy. When
yeah, I mean, I can't say
because I know some people who have said, you know, I have seen a ghost, or I have seen. Right,
me too. I mean, I want to be like, no, of course they're not ghosts, but I've never seen one.
I think there are things
out there we can't explain.
Yeah,
I know people. Yeah, personally, who are like, oh yeah, I've seen ghosts, and I don't think they're liars. But
because I guess my question,
I'd be more scared of a Civil War ghost than a non-Civil War ghost.
I just the fear that you have is so specific and so strong that one might assume that it was because you literally had an experience.
No, I mean,
the fear of maybe encountering one is.
Don't get me wrong. I don't want to see any ghost of any variety in any sort of uniforms. But I'm just saying specifically Civil War ghosts to me, growing up where I grew up and having that be such a part of the history of the place I lived. It's extra scary to me for some reason.
Yeah.
But no, I don't want to see any ghosts of any stripes. But,
and in general, which we said, you don't really like being afraid. Like, you don't like going
I'm not into it at all.
I was going to ask you to see Cabin in the Woods. And then I was like, what am I talking about?
Oh my God,
about?
My ex. Ask her? My now ex was, yeah. he saw that too and was so jazzed about it. I was like, oh, you got to see it. That was, he was always annoyed. I never wanted to see horror movies. And I'm like, I don't enjoy being scared. I just don't.
Yeah.
I like being comfortable.
Yeah.
What movies, able to sleep.
What movies, what kind of movies do you, I'm not, I guess that's.
I like all kinds, like, I like all kinds of movies.
Like, is there something that comes out that gets you super, like, is there like, where you're like, oh, I'd love to go see a good documentary.
I love documentaries. Yeah. I love John Waters movies. Like, growing up, I was obsessed with John Waters.
Makes
also
sense, right?
I had a pen pal in Baltimore.
Talk about androgyny and we would that talk, sort of
oh,
stuff.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. And like the camp of it and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I love documentaries. I just like movies. I
have an answer to that either. If someone asked me, I'd be like, what do you mean? I just like movies.
I go see everything. I really do. I still go see like Adam Sandler movies, dude. I'll go see anything except really horror movies. I as far as genres go, I don't know. Cause I even like action movies. I like everything. My favorite movie of all time is Hairspray. That's my favorite. The OG Hairspray.
You know, I've never seen the original Hairspray.
It's my favorite. It was one of those movies where I rented it so many times growing up. My mom put her foot down and was like, I'm not paying to rent this again. Right. Like, there's no way.
You couldn't just buy it.
Yeah, I don't know why. Like, we had a thing, like, family style. Like, every week we'd go to Blockbuster or whatever. I get to pick something out. And after, like, the 20th week, my mom's like, I'm not paying for you to rent that movie again. Like, it's not happening. Pick
That's
something
true.
Else.
The 20th time to rent it, you could have easily owned probably two copies of
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But I don't. You know what? It's funny. I didn't really understand John Waters movies. Like, yeah. I mean, I remember seeing them and having friends show me them and be like, isn't this fantastic? And I just didn't. It's not that I didn't like them. I just was like, yeah. But it didn't. They didn't really speak to me the way. I'm trying to think of what. I mean, I was just like obsessed with Harold and Maude. I mean, like many teenagers or like many people, I would just watch that movie over and over and over again.
I think with John Waters, I just identified another. I was like, oh, this guy's weird like me and likes weird stuff and
yeah,
lets his freak flag fly kind of thing.
That is a tough stanza. I mean, that's a tough. Yeah.
I don't know why. It's weird even saying this out loud because I didn't feel like a freak in high school. I really didn't. I mean, like I said, I knew I liked things other people I knew didn't like, but it was never. Yeah, it didn't like destroy me. I still could hang, I thought.
I still just love the image of you hastily writing, like handwriting all those letters to pen pals and stuff.
Oh my God, constantly is the best. But I made so many good friends and I met so many people. I've met almost all my heroes. They're all great. Like, I've had too much good luck. Like, you know how people are like, you shouldn't meet your heroes. Like, Billy Bragg is a good friend of mine now. I've met Jarvis Cocker from Pulp several times. The last time I saw him, he was like, hey, April, how's it going? And I almost had a heart attack. Like, I've just been so lucky and that everybody I've admired and met has been cool.
That is great. And I have talked about that a couple of times on the podcast with people who are like, I never want to meet. And I've said it. I'm like, I'm never
I see.
Meet
and that was
heroes.
The thing is that I... It sounds psycho, though. Like, looking back, too, there are times where I'm like, oh, man, I can't believe I did. Like, I am the kind of person that is such a fan of people and is so into them. That, and this is what probably people who murder people say, but I feel like I want to be friends. Like I'm literally like, we would be friends. Like I know we would be friends. And I swear to God, that's probably what people say before they go show up and assassinate somebody.
I think about that too, but there are people I have felt that about people and been as have you, you know, I mean, there are people very lucky to be in this for me to be in this business and to feel like, oh, I wouldn't, you know, I don't know that I would have known that Bruce McCullough and I would be so close.
Right.
And I'm so lucky.
Yeah.
And all that does is feed further. Like once it happens a couple of times, you're like, well, clearly. So I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before, but like my sort of number one person like that is Emma Thompson. Like I'm sure that Emma Thompson and I would be dear friends. And every time I think that, even to myself, I'm like, yep, you're psychotic.
No, exactly. Like, exactly. I mean, I do have some horror stories of people that I would write like more fans I'd write to who I would be like, you're a weirdo. Like I can't like to where I'd step back and be like, as much as I am into this guy, like you need help.
Yeah.
There were a few people where I'm like, oh, this is why people think that fanatics are weirdos.
It's so hard to know.
Like I met this one pen pal.
You know, it's just what you said. Like if you thought that maybe could be true about yourself or that it could come off that way.
Yeah,
those people are just thinking, you know what I mean? It's so confusing.
It is. And there were times where I had to step back. I mean, I've been extremely lucky for the most, like totally lucky, great friends, whatever. But I did have this one pen pal come visit who I knew solely through Morrissey, and we had traded Morrissey zines, and she came to stay with me in Atlanta when we went to see Morrissey, and it was the worst experience of my life. And not only was she just like a rude person, like she just was rude and had no manners and was not very friendly, but she talked about Morrissey as if they were friends and would say things, you know, would just be like, do you think he likes me? And do you think that if I did, like, to where I'm like, are making me feel ashamed that I'm into this guy because what are you talking about? And she was way older than me too. I mean, I was like 17 or 18 and she was at the time like 23 or something. And so I was like, you're supposed to be an adult. Like if anything, I'm supposed to be talking like this and you should be talking sense to me. And yeah, so that was a little wake up call where I'm like, wow, I bet there are people who think I'm a total weirdo. Yeah. And then, I mean, that's still true today. I mean, it absolutely is true that people still think I'm weird because I'm going to go see him twice this month. I mean, I still go see him all the time and people my age are definitely like, what, who cares? But yeah, that I did have a couple of experiences just with people where I'm like, wow, okay, I see why the outside world thinks I'm a total nutbag. You know what I mean? So,
oh man,
I've tried to temper it a little bit, but I mean, I keep a lot of it to myself. People come to my apartment though, and it's still wall to wall records and framed pictures of, you know, Damon Albarn and Jarvis Cocker and stuff. And they're like, what? Okay. Like I went on one date with this guy, one date, and I made the mistake of letting him in.
Oh no.
Yeah. Like when he came to pick me up
to the shrine.
Yeah. And I was like, just brushing. I was like, oh, I just got to brush my teeth, whatever. And I let him in and he didn't call. I was like, okay. Like, I think that was it. Think he was for real. Like, what is going on? And then,
but at the same time, I guess it just goes back to what I love about you, which is that you just are kind of unapologetically who you are. And I think that's one of the reasons I was so excited for you to do the podcast is I just think you're an example of somebody who it's not necessarily about like, look, you may not know who you are yet. But you can get there, as a standing example of like, sometimes you know who you are and you just stay that person. And it has nothing to do with arrested development. It's about developing earlier, understanding yourself early, and that authenticity.
Plus,
I just like to like stuff.
I like to like stuff.
I love that you're passionate and you're enthusiastic and I just encourage everyone to, you know, you can't manufacture that if it's not real, but like, don't be afraid to sort of really don't dip a toe in. Like get in there and get it all over you and figure out why, if you want to, why it's so appealing. And I just, it's exciting. I think it's exciting and inspiring. I'm always so excited and inspired, even not, like I said, like your love of Morrissey, frankly, doesn't change how I feel about him because I just feel he's fine. Like, oh yeah. Right. But your enthusiasm towards him is infectious in a way that it makes me excited to be excited about what I like.
Right.
And I just think that's cool that it's like communicable in
I'm the same way.
You know,
I love meeting people. If I meet somebody and they don't like any of the stuff I like, but they're jazzed about their stuff, I'm like, I'm so on board with that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something too that I've found the older I get, the more I'm like, I don't care what you like really, as long as you're super into it and you know a lot about it, then that's appealing to me. And I want to hear you talk about it because I like hearing other people be psyched about stuff. Yeah.
Well, I think that's what I want to leave this episode with is, is
get
don't,
psyched.
Don't, yeah, get psyched. Don't be afraid to be jazzed. Celebrate what you're jazzed about and be unabashed about it.
Right on.
Well, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Talk to you guys soon. Bye. As always, the JV Club theme song is Before We Were Brittle, courtesy of the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.